Congratulations. Nice win.
Thank you.
Yesterday on Miami, I take it that you guys obviously did some work. We'll start with our Wildcat offense because I don't want to spend a lot of
time with it. We call it now.
We call it Pussycat off the formation. We don't want to spend a lot of time with it, but obviously a much different outcome in the nine plays that they ran with that.
Yeah, I think the players did a good job. You know, it starts inside with Vince. Vince had a whale of a game.
Yeah.
You know, that was really a total mismatch.
Yeah,
he was two-gapping that guy with one arm.
So yeah, we got a lot of stuff turned back into him. He handled the middle. We tackled better. It wasn't perfect. We still missed a few, but we tackled a lot better than we did in the first game. And but the players did a good job. You know, they did. They played good technique, and they tackled well.
Let me ask you a question. Now, they're moving the ball well, and Pennington's a great quarterback. He, you know, picks out the receivers, the open receivers. And you're having success. Why would you switch to the Wildcat? Just because you did it? I mean, if I'm that team and I get the flow, the offense is flowing. Like, you go with the spread offense, it's working. You don't switch just because you think you should. I thought they were in a groove and they went to the Wildcat, and it kind of disrupted the flow a little.
Right. But the only thing I'll say, Fred, is that's what they do.
Yeah.
That's just what they do. They go in and out of empty, spread, Wildcat, two-back formations. They have – you know, several different packages that they use, and you know, check with me, unbalanced line, and they just go in and out of those. So you know, I guess so that you can't get too much of a you know, beat on what they're doing. They're into something else, and so you know, they move the ball well again, and they've had good production offensively. I mean, it's hard to argue with you know, the fact that they're moving the ball and scoring some points, but. That's their philosophy. They do that every game. So.
One quick question on that also is, when they've run 59 times and 55 times they ran the ball, the threat of the pass is limited because you've got a halfback handling the ball. So I think what progression is, people obviously give more of a emphasis on the run because you know that if you put pressure on that running back, he's going to have trouble throwing the ball, even if they call for a throw in that situation.
Yeah, I don't think they're really looking to throw the ball there. They'll throw it maybe once every couple games, just to keep you honest. I think the big thing is that they just try to get you in formations where you're a little bit outnumbered, where they have you know, a blocker for every potential defender, and then let the back pick the hole. And that's really what they try to get to on that formation. And, you know, they've had varying degrees of success with it. They've had some really big plays, and then they've had some other ones that have been not so good. But it's, you know, it's a way for them to get Brown some more carries, and I guess they feel like get him the ball with a little bit more of a fairer fight with fairer numbers. So.
Offensively, you spread the field right from the get-go. Was that a factor of what you're trying to do against them, their defense, or your confidence in Castle in the offense?
Well, I'd say more we felt like that was the way to attack them, Steve. And then they, you know, they're doing a good job in the running game. They're hard to run against in a 3-4. Mm-hmm. They're a big physical team, and we thought that they would have a little trouble if we spread them out some. And they pretty quickly got out of their 3-4 and didn't really play it for the last three quarters plus. Mm-hmm. Played a lot of nickel. And then we also played some four wides, and that kind of took that put him into a dime package and brought Bell down from safety. And several times he was matched up against Welker in the slot and stuff like that. Will Allen, so that, you know, they had some different matchups in there. And a couple times we got in on the linebacker on Crowder. So we just felt like we'd get some better matchups with some – different receiver variations, empty formation, and three wides and four wides and stuff like that.
You surprised at the coverage they put on Randy? It seemed like they did a little bit more man. And they watched the Jets saying, man, they took Randy out, but they opened up everything else. They just tried to spread the coverage out?
Right, Fred. I would say that Miami did pretty much what they've been doing all year. They play a lot of single high safety and rotate rotate down to, you know, like a 3-deep, 4-under type coverage. A lot of times it's man, but it's kind of that principle. And, you know, I'm sure they felt like on a couple of those passes that there was real good coverage. Randy made a great catch. One time they batted the ball out of there and intercepted it. And, you know, it was a very competitive game at halftime. And then they scored to take the lead, started the third quarter, and then we came back. And so, you know, it was kind of back and forth there. And then, you know, at the end of the game, you know, the middle of third quarter on, then, you know, we were able to make, you know, more plays than they were. But that's really what they've been doing about all year, so it wasn't a big surprise that they stayed with it.
Matt Castle has made it a weekly thing now to make that run up the middle. Is that set up by the fact that you are spreading out your offense, and if they're in man-to-man, that opens up the middle for them?
Right. Yeah. Exactly, Glenn. If everybody's man to man and you're in a spread formation, then everybody's got to chase and get those guys, and then that really leaves you four rushers against five blockers. So that there's really six gaps there, right? You have five blockers, so mm-hmm. there's a gap on each. So there's six gaps with only four rushers to cover those six gaps. So it's hard to contain a quarterback if you can, just move one guy out of the way. Then, there's some space in there to run. And, depending on the situation, the red area was a chance for us, third and three, third and four, third and five. It's not the kind of play you want to
play. Was that a read?
So does he read it? Yeah, does he read it at that point? He reads it?
Well, it could be either one. It could be a call play, or it could just open up that way sometimes. You're looking at the pattern, and you don't see anybody open, and you see the pass rush part,
right.
And then you just step up and go. So
we saw that.
But that's the problem of playing man-to-man down there is if the formation, if the pattern, extends you out of the formation, then you're kind of light on the quarterback if the quarterback can run.
That's the Wild Castle offense.
Yeah, there you go.
Good,
Fred.
Wow. Coach, I thought the game changed after you guys took that 24-21 lead, and then Kim Rio made that great catch and dragged like five guys with him for a big first down at your 27. And then they went to the Wildcat again. Williams got a yard for nothing. And then Satelli holding Will Fork was a huge play. They went from your 27, then Seymour sack and Vrabel smack and best to your 41, and they ended up having a punt. Four plays later, you guys are in the end zone. I thought that series, I thought that's where the game completely changed.
Yeah, that was huge. And getting a holding call there, Vince getting a holding call, that was a big play. And then, being able to convert that bad field position into a touchdown on a long drive with the pass to Welker and, his great run down the sideline, all that. It was a big swing in field position and ultimately in points.
And the downside was when they came out at halftime, they moved right down the field and scored. What was
– Well, they hit the long pass to start. Yeah. And then
hit three passes, right?
Right. They hit the one down the sideline again. That was a big one. I'm trying to remember what the other ones were. But, they do a good job in the passing game. And Pennington's a good quarterback, and he got us a few times. And, we got him a couple, but he got us a few.
Because you had mostly, blitzing. How often did you blitz on him?
We mixed it up a little bit, but it wasn't an inordinate amount of blitzing.
He's a guy that reads the blitz probably as well as anybody.
Yeah, he gets rid of the ball pretty quick. He's a hard guy to blitz unless you can really get on the receivers tight and make him pull the ball down.
And they came off the corner a couple times blitzing, and Matt was prepared, seemed, every single time.
Yes, Pete, they didn't really blitz much in the first half, but their kind of adjustment in the third quarter was to bring a lot of people, and a couple times they brought them all, We had a couple side adjusts. They got us one time there at the end on a third and four, I think it was. We ended up kicking a field goal in the fourth quarter. But that was their adjustment, was to bring pressure. They gave a few plays on that, too.
You hit that inside handoff a bunch of times.
Yeah, that was in coverage. Like yeah, they were in coverage on that when Falk split them. And then when Castle scored, they were in that split safety man coverage. And both times they were out of there, they got kind of extended. And we were able
to find
the
hole,
can't
he?
He's quick.
Is there any one or two things you can point to that is causing some of the defensive difficulties on third down?
Not enough pass rush, not good enough coverage. I mean, we have decent pressure on the quarterback, but we're not tight enough on the receivers, and they stick it in there. Sometimes we have better coverage on the receivers, like on the scramble touchdown by Pennington. We have pretty good coverage on the receivers, we lost the edge on the pass rush. Another time we had him there on third down in the red area. Pennington was trying to throw to the flat. We had that covered. He scrambled around, and Kramer and Merriweather bumped into each other and fell down, hit him in the end zone there. So, I'd say it's a combination of things. But sometimes the receivers are open. Sometimes the pass rush isn't good enough. Sometimes it's a little bit of both.
Now, I'm going to talk about the mouth from the south for a moment, not Steve Biasi.
Who's that?
Porter, Matt Light. When you talk about last time they were up here, the three- and four-man line did a lot of pressure on, just with four guys. And down there, he didn't even get a sniff. I mean, what was the difference? Was it control the cadence real well? I mean, he looked like he slowed down the cadence when they're bringing the blitz up and was in control of that offensive line and the rhythm of the cadence. So what was the big difference from the control of that defensive line to the last time they played?
So the big thing, Fred, first of all, I think tackles did a real good job on that. And at times we gave him a little bit of help. But the big thing was we didn't let Porter inside. And I think two of his three sacks in the first game came when on up and under moves,
yeah,
where he came back underneath. And this time we kind of kept him out of there, made him run around the corner, and he got some pressure on the one where it, I thought he was real close to being offside. He got a good jump on the ball, and but for the most part, I thought that the tackles, you know, late. But Nick too, he was on both sides. Those guys did a good job blocking him inside out, forcing him to go up the field. Matt did a nice job of stepping up in the pocket, and you know, the pass rush wasn't a big factor. There was a lot more pressure when they started blitzing, but you know, we were able to hit a few of those plays to the receivers on the quick throws.
Yeah, watching a lot, even the Buffalo game and Jets, he likes to come up and inside because he's got the quickness and people jump out at him. So adjusting to that. But
yeah, he threatens you with the speed rush and makes the tackles extend and go out there and get him. And then once he gets them running, then he gets back underneath. And that's really where a lot of his pressure comes from, is that up and under move. And tackles did a good job of taking that away.
I want to go back to the third down situation. We were talking about this earlier. You seem to defend third and short a lot better than third and long. Is that a matter of you're defending the run better now than you're defending the pass? Is it as simple as that, or is there more to it?
You know, I wish I had a better answer for that, Glenn. I really would. You would think you'd be better on third and ten.
You would
than
think,
three,
yeah,
but
third and short, you seem to be doing just fine, but over the last few weeks, it's been the third and 15s, the third and 12s that have killed you.
Yeah, and that's really frustrating. We just got to do a better job on that. It's you know, starts with, you know, probably not bad coaching, and then, you know, some not so great playing to go along with it at times. So we just got to do a better job of coaching it. We got to coach it better. We got to play it better. We got to get off the field on third and 10 or more. I mean, that should be a 10% conversion thing, and we're just giving up too many of them.
It's quite the opposite of what we thought. We thought this team would rely strong on defense, and no one thought Matt Castle would put back-to-back 400-yard games. What's the first time in history at 500 yards of offense, two games in a row? The progression of Matt Castle just seems like he's so much more comfortable reading and finding the defensive adjustments and the offensive adjustments to the schemes. And he's not looking at the blitz anymore. He's feeling it, moving in the pocket so well. You know, did you ever think in your wildest dreams that this guy would have been at this level this fast?
Well, I don't know if I would have predicted, you know, what the stats would be, but I think that everybody felt good about Castle from day one. It's just, you know, the game experience is something that he hadn't had, and as he's gotten more of it, he's continued to improve.
You talked about the speed of the game, too.
Right, sure, and it moves a lot faster on third down and in the red area and all that, but he's done a great job for us on third down, and he continues to make good decisions. And, you know, he's a smart kid. He works hard. He's athletic. He can throw the ball very accurately. He's got good timing, and, you know, he just needed to play, and he's gotten that opportunity, and you know, he just gets better every time he walks on the field, whether it's practice or walkthrough or meetings or the games on Sunday, you know. And I really think that, you know, football is a game where you can't just improve on Sunday. You know, there's not enough games. It's not like other sports where you're playing multiple times a week. You just play once a week. So you've got to improve during the weekend practice. You've got to improve in, you know, the walkthroughs, the meetings and everything. You know, you got to pick up something every time you go over it as a team. And he does that.
Here's a question, though. How do you find Matt? I mean, he was a backup quarterback in USC. Did someone just call you and say, you got to take a look at this kid? I mean, you don't scout a lot of backups because you don't see them.
Right. Well, basically, when our scouts went out to USC, they were responsible to scout every senior eligible player, not just the ones who, you know, are the all-stars and all-Americans and everything. And you know, the discussion with Castle really was that, you know, he and Leinart were kind of neck and neck through spring ball and in training camp, and then they made the decision to go with Leinart. He had a couple big games early. I think he threw over 400 yards against somebody on the first or second game of the season, and so they stayed with him. He had a big year, and he won the Heisman Trophy. But so when you hear that, you say, okay, well, you know, here's a guy who was very close to being the starting quarterback. You know, I wonder what would have happened if he had been a quarterback. Would he have won a Heisman Trophy? Would they have won 10 games? Would they have won 9? What, you know? But they thought enough of him for it to be that competitive. And, of course, you know, Pete's been in the NFL, and he knows a NFL quarterback when he sees one. And you know, he had a lot of great things to say about Matt. It's unfortunate that he played behind Carson Palmer and Leinart and Brady.
But, so know, how much time did you have to actually see him?
Well, he only threw 30 passes in college. So you're
was
really,
this more recommendation,
easy
people that you trust?
That film.
Well, and you look at the plays that you can look at, and then you go and watch him work out. And when you go and watch Matt work out, you see, okay, you know, he's a smart kid. He's athletic. He runs well. He's quick, good quickness in the pocket, and he can throw the ball accurately and with a good touch. So, you know, I think the worst feeling you can have is when you bring a player onto your team. Say you draft a player, you walk out in the mini camp, and you have a couple practices in the spring, and you know after those practices, this player just does not have enough talent to compete with our players at that position. He just doesn't have enough talent. So, you know, you know where that's going. Castle, on the other hand, when you watch him work out and you watch him throw, you can say, okay, well, this guy has plenty of talent. Then you put him on the board, talk to him about different situations. What do you read here? What do you do on this? What do you do on that? And, you know, and he understands it, and he's a smart kid. So you just got to see him play then. But, you know, you feel like you're working with something, and that's why we drafted him. You know, we talked about signing him as a free agent, but, you know, we knew that Chow was at Tennessee. We knew that Carson Palmer was at Cincinnati, and those two teams had shown some interest in him, and we just weren't sure if we'd be able to get him as a free agent because he might have some loyalty to, you know, to either Palmer or to his college coach, Chow. So we decided to go ahead and draft him and make sure we get him.
You obviously saw him every day in practice, and Steve brings this up all the time, and I think it's a good one in that a lot of people saw him in the preseason and fans and weren't that impressed with him, but those are four of 60 practices, basically, that you're watching. You're seeing all of those practices. Do you really need that type of game experience? Because to see the development of this kid from week to week in a game conditions is remarkable.
Well, I think that the games, you know, say a lot. I mean, certainly the practices do as well, but it's a little bit different when you're back there in practice with a red jersey on, throwing whatever you want to throw, and you know the mistakes aren't as magnified. You get out there in a game, and there's no red jersey, and when they hit you hard, and when you make a mistake, then it's, you know, you lose the ball. So, you know, the plays happen a lot faster in practice, in the games, than they do in practice, no matter how you try to simulate that. But I think, as I said today a little bit earlier in the press conference, you know, people look at the game and they see the quarterback throw for a lot of yardage, and all of a sudden they want to, you know, they want to put him in a Hall of Fame.
So they're picking up the offensive line.
And then they watch the same, you know, they watch another game and a quarterback doesn't throw for a lot of yardage, and they want to see the other quarterback in there. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's 10 other guys out there, guys that are blocking, guys that are running routes, guys that are pass protecting, backs and tight ends have different assignments and so forth in the passing game. And so when everything's going good, then you're going to have good production, whether it be a running back, a quarterback, a receiver, or whatever. And when things aren't going good, even though one person might be doing their job fairly well, if there's breakdown somewhere else, you don't have that kind of production. So, you know, it only takes one guy to make the tackle in a running game. So, you know, you can have a lot of plays well blocked, but you miss one and you're not getting any yards. And it can be the same thing in a passing game. You've got to have a lot of guys doing things right, and, you know, the receiver misses on a route, or, you know, there's not good distribution, so the hole doesn't open up, or quarterback doesn't make a great throw, or whatever. And, you know, all of a sudden, you're not moving the ball. So there's a fine line between successful, productive offense and unsuccessful, and the same thing on defense. But
well, our listeners have been so level-headed, nobody's gone overboard one way or the other.
That's what happens here, though. Steve and I try and carry
Glenn. Trade Brady today.
We've heard everything from Trade Brady to franchise tag to everything. So it's, you're right. People get excited and they get carried away.
Especially at that position.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so easy to do.
Well, he touches the ball, and if you're watching TV, it's the position you see on every single play.
That's right. I have one other question about how you practice for the Wildcat. Now, I think Kevin Falk was simulating Ronnie Brown this week.
Yes.
How difficult is it for him when he's in that position, knowing that he's basically lined up in that formation and going to get crushed when you're working that play out? Is that tough for a player to go through?
Oh, I don't know. I think they kind of enjoy it because the way the formation's set up, it gives the running back a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't move toward the line of scrimmage and get the ball from the quarterback. You get it a couple yards deeper. And so whatever the blocking pattern is, you have, you know, a couple more steps, maybe another second to read it.
And his vision's
and you
great.
Have another, yeah, and Kevin has very good run vision.
Did he
and,
throw
and
it?
You
Did
have
he,
another blocker.
Does he throw it all in practice? Did he try, I mean?
Yeah, the plays that they ran, like the bootleg they ran against us, or they ran Arkansas ran a couple passes out of it that we worked against that, you know, we don't know whether they had them in or not, but there were plays that they ran last year with McFadden. So, you know, but I think a player like Kevin, probably, you know, I thought he had fun with it. He really did. He gave us a great look, but, you know, he had fun doing it. Some that he had to run and, you know, get to run some run pass options and faking.
How'd he do against the first team?
He's doing great. I mean, he gave us a great look.
Think about
you. So you were a little worried Thursday and Friday then.
Well, it was a realistic look. When we had breakdowns, he found them, and it made us correct the plays to make sure that, you know, we had all the gaps covered.
Dean Pease was upstairs. Matt Patricia was downstairs. Was that just for that game, or is that something that you might do more often?
Well, we'll talk about that going forward this week to, in Pittsburgh and down the road. But, you know, Dean's been up before and Matt's been down and vice versa. We just felt like for this game with all the different personnel groups that Miami uses, all the different formations and so forth, that sometimes when you're calling defenses, it's a lot easier to look down there and see it rather than have somebody tell you what it is and then kind of process it and then make the call off of that. So I've called defenses from both spots, too, from up in the press box, down on the field. There's advantages and drawbacks to both, but there's certainly some advantages to be able to see the game from on top, especially when there's a lot of movement going on in between plays and different formations.
Now, Coach, let me ask you a question. Do you think it's your responsibility to stop your offense when the Miami defense is on the field at the end of the game? We had some crybaby announcers, but you're running a dive with the four-string running back.
That's the question of the week.
That's the question. You know. Well, we have some cuts we want to play with you.
Well,
but they're complaining
we were going to ask whether you felt you were upset you weren't able to rest your players for next week's Pittsburgh game.
You had to,
but that question had already been taken, so we didn't ask it.
Well, I'll just say at the end of the game, I think that you know when you get to the point in the game where you can kneel on the ball and the clock's going to run out, then you kneel on the ball.
Yeah.
But when you're going to kneel on the ball to give it back to them, then I think you run plays and gain what you can gain until the game's over.
They ran one when they got the ball back with the short amount of time they had. They ran a play, correct?
Yeah.
They got, one more play.
Was
they didn't kneel down.
Two score before that touchdown.
Anything can happen.
Game. Has Matt Light been called down to the commissioner's office?
You know, I don't know, Glenn.
Are you worried? Are you concerned that you might end up losing him this week?
Well, we don't have any control over that, so whatever. We'll just go with whatever happens.
All right, let's get to this week. It's Pittsburgh. It's a team, obviously, that you guys know very, very well.
Seems like another division.
It
game.
Does.
It's like Indianapolis.
It's amazing. And it's a team right now that defensively is very,
number
very
one.
Difficult
number one
to penetrate. They're number one across the board. You look at the numbers, they're number one across the board.
And not only the number one in defense across the board, they're number one in kickoff coverage, and I think it's number two in punt coverage.
Are they really? Mm-hmm.
So they're, I mean, it's the same guys. It's the same guys running down there tackling on kicks as it is on defense. But they're tough, and you know, they do a great job defensively. As you said, they're one in yardage, one against the run, one against pass, one in the red area, one on third down. I think they got the second most sacks, so on and on. But they're sound, they're solid, they're tough, they're fast, they tackle well, they give you a lot of different looks.
They blitz a lot. I mean,
they pressure you, and then they'll cover you and change up enough to make you worry about it. I mean, you can't count on them coming every time, but they're coming.
So even with a new coach in Tomlin of the last few years, they still seem to have the same personality that
Dicklebeau
had.
Dicklebeau's a coordinator, and it's really LeBeau's defense, and he runs it the same way that he's been running it when he was there, also at Cincinnati, and the way Tomlin ran the defense at Minnesota, it really looks like he's turned it back over to LeBeau, and so they're doing the same thing.
Well, Minnesota was number one against the run, and they couldn't cover the pass real well. I mean, you guys played Minnesota, went down the field passing the ball. They're more concerned with the run. Offensively, how much have they changed over the years?
Not a whole lot. I would say that they it just depends on how much they want to spread and how much they want to use their multiple receivers. And, last year they ran a lot of three receivers against us, more so than in some other games. And you see it in different percentages this year. Sometimes they run their two tight ends and one back or a little bit of a two-back set, and then sometimes they get into the three receivers and spread it out and go shotgun and let Ben throw it around. Last couple of weeks they've gone more, I think, to a controlled passing game, and earlier in the season they were getting the ball down the field a little bit more to Holmes and Ward and Washington, those guys. So they can play both ways.
Seems like the coverage, when he's getting close to being sacked or pressured, that's when the big plays come up because people come up to help or they see that the play's over, and he has a good enough arm to throw it flat-footed a great length. And he's made some big plays when he's about to be sacked or tackled.
Right. He's very good at, and when he scrambles at looking down the field. You know, he got one on us last year. He threw a touchdown last year on the scramble. So he's a hard guy to tackle. And a lot of times, the DBs think he's going down or that he's in the grasp and they got him, and then he pulls out of it, and he's got a big arm. He can throw as far as he needs to. So he's a tough guy.
How different are they, though, from last year? Because they came in here, and you guys beat him by three touchdowns. I think that was also the play where you had that Moss pass right on the loud. But how much throwback different are they this year from last year? Because you guys were throwing the ball all over the place on them last year.
Yeah, last year I think we only had eight runs in a game, Pete.
Yeah.
But if you remember, it was 17-13 at the half. Yeah. It was a very competitive game.
I know it was.
And they had four drives, I think, of 12 plays or more or something like that. And then, you know, we got a couple scores there in the third quarter. We stopped them on the goal line on a fourth down play where they tried to run a sweep to Hines Ward. So, you know, again, a couple plays, and you got maybe a last possession game. So, you know, we were able to make a couple key plays at the right time. Like you said, the fourth down stop, the double pass from, you know, Moss back to Brady to Gaffney. And, you know, those plays swing the game. But it was very competitive. So they like I said, they spread us out. They probably threw it a little bit more against us than they did against some other teams. We certainly threw it quite a bit against them.
Downside about all this offense, you haven't had much work on your punting game. How many times have you punted the last 2 weeks?
Not too many.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Punting game's okay, though? We don't have to worry about that, sorry?
Yeah. However, okay, Hanson, you know, got a little extra time in a tub and massage.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Well, yesterday, I mean, at the end of the game yesterday when that little skirmish was happening, and then Matt fell on Gostowski's leg at the end of the game.
Really?
Yeah,
but he's light.
He did. No, he talked about it today, and that could have been disaster.
Well, one guy you didn't see involved at the end of the game was Vince.
Smart.
He already
had his visit.
I hope they look at it objectively.
I think Vince is done.
I could read the lips of that kid. I wasn't happy whether I
heard Vince is done with those trips down to the commissioner's office. His wife bailed him out last time. He's afraid it might not work
that play
out.
That play where Vince had his hands in there running after Pennington. I mean, that was like, if I was Pennington, I'd be scared out of your mind.
All right, time right now for our CleanEnergyAction.net Coach's Question of the Week. And this week's question, Coach, comes from Joe Lynch from Belmont, Massachusetts. And Joe asks, I understand the Patriots operate out of a base 3-4 defense, which sometimes switches to a 4-3. Why did you choose the 3-4 as the base defense? What are the advantages and disadvantages with each type of defense?
Well, I think some of the advantages of a 3-4 defense are when you have linebackers at the end of the line, it allows you to adjust the formations easier instead of having a defensive lineman out there. Where linebackers are inside, then you always have to rotate your secondary. So you have an opportunity to adjust with those linebackers. Think also, if you're a 3-4 team, you carry more linebackers on your team and as opposed to defensive linemen, which that helps you in the kicking game because those players participate more in the kicking game than the defensive linemen do. So from an overall depth standpoint, there are some advantages, and from a formation adjustment standpoint, there are some advantages. You know, the key to it really is you know, you need a good nose. That's number one. And then number two, you need two good outside linebackers that can play on their feet, that can play in coverage, can rush the passer, you know, can hold up against tackles, but also can play in space and can cover. So, you know, when you get those things, then a lot of the other stuff can kind of work around. I'm not saying the other positions aren't important, but I'm saying that when you're putting together that, then, you know, you need those things. You know, whereas if you're playing a 4-3, then I think it's kind of the reverse of that. You need two good defensive ends to be able to, you know, to be athletic and rush the passer from the outside and play the outside running game. And then you need a good middle linebacker who can, you know, scrape and fill all those holes inside and be a productive tackler. So I'd say that depending on which one you have in terms of the front, that's, you know, a couple good places to start.
It's hard in college, though, to find a good two-gap nose tackle because everyone plays – even Wilfort was a one-gap tackle, and then to learn the true gap like he does, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I think that's because teams just don't play it in college. And you're right, very few of them do. You know, Al plays it at Virginia, or Texas A&M played it when, but for the most part, you don't see it. And so then they have to make the adjustment to playing two gap in the pros. They could play it in college, they're just not
just
taught.
They just don't play it.
Do you think guys are married to it? Because you talk about certain coaches, oh, yeah, he runs a 3-4 or whatever, that they're married to it, or do they base it on what they have for personnel? Because you do need that personnel, as you said. Or certain guys just married to it, and they say, well, eventually I'll find out that personnel.
Right, yeah. Well, like Pittsburgh, they're 3-4 team. They've been that for 15 years, and they're going to, if they're not having a good year, they're going to stay with it and find somebody to do it the next year. But a lot of their 3-4 gets kicked over or under, depending on the call, which then really puts them into a four-man line. And I think you're seeing from some of the four-man line teams, a lot of times one of their defensive linemen will drop out into coverage, like on the blitz zones and things like that. You see ends or sometimes even defensive tackles dropping out, which really now brings you back to 3-4 principles. So whichever one you play, there's probably some element of the other one in some part of your defensive system, too.
And even in those four-man fronts, a lot of those outside rush guys are almost hybrid type players too. Between linebacker,
if they were on a 3-4 team, they'd be an outside linebacker.
Exactly right.
Like Calvin Pace for the Jets.
Right.
Perfect.
When we ran our 3-4. We did all overs and unders all the time. We had Biscuit outside, you know, Tally, and we'd do overs and unders and cover up the guards and slants. But like you said, the Pittsburgh always used to offset and hit those gaps with the nose tackle, more of a penetrating type guy, and let the back is, you know, fill. But you talked about the best athletes. Defensive linemen are the best athletes, Bill.
Amongst linemen, probably.
Nose tackles?
At the buffet, always. I'm the fastest guy around the house.
You know, Bill did say you needed a guy with a nose. He did say that.
He did look at me.
He said a big nose. He said a big nose.
It wasn't this big.
Every Patriots Monday this year, when we talk with the coach, you'll have your chance to submit your question to Ask the Coach at WEEI.com's football contest page. And if your question is chosen, you'll automatically win a $100 gift card to the all-new Davios right here at Patriot Place. The coach's question powered all season long by theclean.org. When you log on to theclean.org, you'll find that a strong wind can do a lot more than push that winning field goal through the uprights. Tackle your energy cost and alternatives at theclean.org today.
Give a question,
so Joe's going to Davios?
Yeah, he's going to Davios.
Got a glass of water.
Love it.
Let me ask you one quick question. Would you have gone for that fourth and two against the Colts last night because they were moving the ball and there's a minute and 20 left?
Oh, San Diego? Yeah.
They're moving the ball. If they get it back.
Yeah,
that
was a tough one. That was a tough one.
So you're putting him in a position.
No, because a minute left.
He's going to criticize North Turner. That's what you're
going to kick a 50-yard field. That's a tough choice for him.
Well, I'm sure they thought about it because they took a timeout.
They did.
And ultimately.
Which hurt them.
That's right. I mean, I think they took it to make the decision. And then.
Then they gave that Manning guy some time.
Wouldn't you? Because you know they got a 50-yard kicker, and they got Manning.
How much does that play when you're playing Indianapolis? You're sitting there saying, I can't let that guy, even with 40 seconds, back on the field.
Well, you definitely say that, Glenn, but in all honesty, I think you say that with every team. I mean, you never want to, you know, you never want to score and leave the other team too much time to, you know, on the clock. I mean,
that guy's done it so many times. It's like other teams with Brady, you know. It's like,
yeah, but still, you don't want to give anybody that opportunity. I mean, you really want to play for the last shot. You got to score, but you know you want to play for the last shot, and that's what you try to do. It doesn't always work out, and then defensively, if you're out there, you got to stop them. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
You're surprised that the Colts in the third, was it fourth and inches, the play action pass was a great call.
Yeah, that was a gutsy call.
Because they missed that. Everyone's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, but with with Manning throwing the ball, you know, and it looked like everyone's punched in there.
No, they were. I mean, it was good action, too. They sold it.
All right, Coach. Congratulations. Big win yesterday. Good luck at Pittsburgh against Pittsburgh here, and happy Thanksgiving.
They're flying us to the Pittsburgh game,
No, they're not. It's Pittsburgh's
here.
I'll be driving very fast.
Pittsburgh's here.